Now, here's Mike Buck and Duke Iona on News Radio 830 KHVH.
You know what this is called?
Yes.
Sir Duke.
Music is a world within itself.
See, you can always tell LG when Chris Peters is back. He's on this. Sir Duke.
I love it.
Okay, welcome to the program. As the man just said, and now Stevie Wonder is singing. It's time to hang out with Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona right here, right now, for the next hour, here to talk story with you on whatever trips your mind. If you want to talk, all you got to do is give us a call. 521-8383. That's the number. And from the neighbor islands, it is a toll-free number. 1-888-565-8383. And we can talk a little bit of politics if you want to. We can talk about what's going on. We can talk about things that are on your mind about the state. And whenever possible, we'll get you an answer before the end of the program what's going on. Interesting. I just realized when the governor's away, you're the governor.
That's right.
Now, how long does the governor have to be away for? Is it like it just whenever she leaves the state?
She leaves the state, so it's... The minute she boards that plane and the plane's airborne.
See, if I were you, man, the minute she's gone, I'm changing everything. I'm making laws. I'm having some fun.
You know, let me tell you, like I said, there are some states which have lieutenant governors that are not of the same party as the governor.
Right.
And there are a couple of states, and I won't name which ones, but the governor will very very strategically leave the state.
Yeah.
He or she will not leave the state at certain times because of that
sure.
difference. So
like they leave Friday late, come back Sunday night, that kind of thing. No, but it's interesting, and that does set some states different from ours. About how many are like that, do you think?
I didn't take a count, but I say about a third of them are like that.
I was going to say probably close to a dozen.
About a third. Remember, we only have 40, I believe it's 43 or 42, soon to be 43 states that have a lieutenant governor.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, because I think this is important, too. It's when you run, say, in a primary election, mm-hmm. like when you file your papers to run for governor, which we're all assuming you're doing, you don't have a lieutenant governor.
No. Your lieutenant governor is not chosen until after the primary.
Yeah, okay. So, now, are there people running for lieutenant governor in the primary?
There should be.
Yeah, in other words, there's people running for governor.
Right.
People running for lieutenant governor.
Right.
But are the people choosing the lieutenant governor candidate, or is the candidate going to choose his running mate?
Oh, no. The people choose the lieutenant governor.
Oh, okay, yes, I got you. Yes, all right, yes. So... In other words,
by vote, in Hawaii, you vote by party in the primary.
Right.
In other states, it's an open election, so you can cross vote. Yeah.
Well, there's also a lot of other races that people don't know about that are nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for instance, City and County of Honolulu.
Right.
The mayor.
Right.
You probably have a pretty good indication what party the person's in.
Right.
But they don't run on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. We made that change a while back. Yeah.
Okay. 521-8383 is the number. 1-888-565-8383. Let me ask you this. One of the things that you and I spoke of as you were leaving last week was that there's probably going to be a poll come up about rail.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to remind you that I said I thought people in the privacy of their home or a poll or the booth, even if they're not going to use rail, they're going to be in favor of some sort of rail.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised at this poll?
Not really. I mean, what I was more surprised at was the questions that they asked, the answers to the other questions mm-hmm. that they asked. Mm-hmm. The majority of the people are in favor of rail,
right.
rail transit. But yet, they also agree that it's too costly,
mm-hmm.
and then in today's paper, not many are going to write it. So
however,
we're not going to write it. It's too expensive, but build it anyway.
But the thing, that's right. And could they be considered selfish because they want other people to write it so they can use the car? but in actual fact, the naysayers of the rail said that about less than 8% would write it, and this survey said 16. So in other words, it is more than we think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people are thinking, we're going to go to the phones here. We'll talk about all other kinds of things. But I can also tell you that from all of the callers that we've had from locales outside of Hawaii
mm-hmm.
that grew up in a place that has mass transit, the first generation and a half doesn't use it.
Right.
But later on, they say, "Oh, I grew up with it."
Right. Well, remember that's what I said. It's going to take a long time.
You got to change the culture
of how we travel. And that's why I've also noted. If you remember, we talked about this a while back. I said, but right now we have a defining moment that's going to change our pattern of transportation. And that's the price of gas right now.
Well, I was going to say, you know, none of these other systems, although they are probably all under somewhat of duress of traffic and everything else, you throw in this. Now they're saying, well, have you seen the new gas coupon? It's a $5 bill. You know, that's good for a gallon of gas, you know? I mean, so that's been a real wake-up call.
Yeah. No, it has. Yeah. And believe me, it's now people are thinking about carpooling. Yeah. They're thinking about the bus. And as I told you the last time, I got a couple of people in my office who have already changed their pattern. They catch the bus at least once a week. Yeah. It's just the way it is. And so they're changing their pattern. You know, I just found something out the other day. And this is I'm going to try to keep it as general as I can because I don't want to give anything away. But there's an industry on one side of this island in which a group of the people who are employed at that industry will camp out on the beach near their workplace because they live on a different side of the island.
Sure.
So they don't have to drive back and forth the whole week. And then they break the camp
and go home
for the weekend.
Yeah, I've heard of that on the mainland a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what's happening right now.
There are guys, you'll be interested in this. There are guys that work for Boeing and Weyerhaeuser and some other in the Pacific Northwest that live in a trailer park during the week near their work site. Mm-hmm. And they go home to their homes on the weekend.
Well, but the distance is a little, I mean, I'm not saying that the distance between this industry and where these people work is not a distance, but a little bit more in the Pacific Northwest, I would assume. But still, that's the kind of changes that are being made right now by our residents.
Yeah, but there's some people that don't want to drive 50 or 60 miles in each direction.
That's true.
When the gas is 4 miles.
No, that's true, and I agree. And look what we're saying.
Okay, let's go out to the phones before we go to our first break. John and Makiki waited the longest. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Lieutenant Governor and Mike.
Hey, good evening.
Can I change the subject a little bit?
Sure. Absolutely.
Mr. Iona, I'd like to know what you think of the idea of moving the school system from the state government to the county governments.
I think that would be great. I think that's we've proposed that from day one in changing the bureaucracy or the administration of our school system. In fact, I was just on the Big Island. What was it? Yesterday, I believe it was, and that was again the topic of discussion was about the schools and
home rule
and what's happening with some small issues that they had. They had some small issues that they were having problems shepherding through the administration, and of course, it seemed so easy that if the local, you know, they had a local school board, it would have been done much quicker. And so, I'm all for it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that when you say you're all for it, to leave the auspices of the state.
Oh, no, right?
Maybe, you know, I mean, he said city, and I said, and I think, hasn't the governor and yourself spoke out in favor of more county ruling?
Well,
the state system?
Well, normally what happens is you have a overarching board, a state board of education, and then your counties have what they call local school boards or county school boards, and they're pretty much autonomous and independent of the state school board, but the state school board has oversight and supervision over these county school boards. That's kind of the system that's implemented around the country, and I think it's good in many respects. Of course, now we have the opportunity to create something that's a little different, and so it would be similar, but obviously different. But that's what I meant when I said yes, I'm all for it. Yeah,
you know, we both have teachers in our families, and you know, we're looking at families right now, and looking at reading the results in the paper of how poorly we're doing in the No Child Left Behind. It either tells you that No Child Left Behind has got to be changed, or our system has got to be changed.
Yeah.
But it ain't, you know, we're just not making it.
Well,
I mean, you know,
my sister's a principal of an elementary school on Oahu, and her school did well.
Yeah.
So I congratulate her on that. But,
we need to look. Okay.
We need some changes.
Governor Duke Iona in the house. Time to talk story with the LG. The number is 521-8383. from the neighbor islands, talk to your lieutenant governor at 1-888-565-8383. 20 minutes after the hour, let's go right back to the phones. Lieutenant Governor Paul is on a cell phone. Hey, Paul, thanks for waiting.
How's it going, guys?
Good. Okay.
I just had two quick comments and a question for Iona. One is the yesterday's paper to kind of show how biased they are. That poll they took of 500 from KGMB that was done by Ward Research, they failed to mention that 250 of the 500 were people that were within the vicinity of the rail that's going to be built.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that the showing that they strongly agree with the rail was kind of biased in the sense that it wasn't, it was the location of who they polled. And that was kind of general knowledge on the website as far as where they got the word.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Paul. Paul, we lost you. So you're going to have to call back. 521-8383. I apologize to Paul, but he just totally drops out. Let's go next to Derek in Pearl City. Hello, Derek.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I have two issues I'd like to ask about. One is education. And the question is, why not privatize or contract out education? It just seemed more efficient and a better way to establish and maintain standards.
Okay. The other question?
The other question had to do, well, it's not so much a question as an observation, and I want to get your feedback on it. I was for rail until there were people against rail, and it seemed as though the city, especially the mayor, didn't want to let people have a vote, and it seemed like he was shoving it down our throats, and I voted for him, but that just kind of offended me. Why not let the people vote? Just, and I'm for rail. I just say, let them vote.
Well, I think the surveys are bearing that out for you, Dirt. I mean, even people that don't want it are saying we should have it.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. I think that's, it's
okay,
right
but,
there.
But the first one, let's talk about that in the big picture. When you say contracting out schools, is it that simple?
Well, I was gonna mention that I don't think it's that simple. Obviously, if it was, we wouldn't have public education. I guess you got to go back to the beginning to get a little history on public education and why we have public education. But I think we've tried this in a way through what we call vultures. There's various cities and counties that have tried to implement a vulture system, and it's been met with resistance in some areas and not and strong opposition in some areas, and I don't think they've quite perfected that the vulture system yet. There's many arguments for it. In other words, saying that this is the way it should go. I mean, it gives them incentive to the public education system to become better. And yet it doesn't punish our students who just happen to be in a bad school district. But on the other hand, it says at the same time, then why do we even have public education? It should be all private education. It would be very complex to move in that direction. But if you were just looking at numbers, if we were just looking at how much we spend per student, I believe in Hawaii, and Mike, I don't know if you got the numbers on this, but if I'm correct on this, we spend about between $9,000 and $10,000
per student
per year.
Yep.
And if you compare that to private education, that's not quite your upper echelon.
It used to be comparable, yeah. But now you take a look at some schools, Punahou, Iolani, all the main big private institutions, they're up $15,000, $16,000 a year.
Yeah, but that's still a lot of money. And I'd say that's more in your mid-tier level of private schools. So, you know, if you just look at it that way, you can say, well, why not? We're spending that amount. We can just contract out schools, and for that price, we'd get this type of education. So, It's a concept. Now, can that be done? Derek, let me tell you, it'd be very, very difficult. But it is a concept. And
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it run in parallel, Derek, something like the charter system did, but with a little bit more money.
And that's the other point that needed to be brought out. We do have the charter schools, which are basically, I would say, akin to privatization because it's more specialized, and you basically run your school and your curriculum and everything else. So the charter schools are probably the closest that you'll get to privatizing public education.
There you go, Derek. I mean, it's a great subject, and one that we could do for hours and
absolutely.
Hours and still not come up with answers.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yep.
Back on the rail issue, again, I'm for it, but I just think they should let the people vote.
Well, you got to read the polls, and you got to read the fact that they probably are, Derek. I don't know what you've missed in the last couple of weeks, but it looks like it's come to that, and it looks like the surveys are showing that people want to vote, but they're going to vote for it.
Yeah, Derek, if you recall, about a couple of weeks ago or so, I recommended that the city council put this issue on the ballot simply because it seemed like it was going to be protracted, it was going to be prolonged, it was going to be dragged out by the anti-rail people because they were being questioned now on whether or not they had enough signatures on their petition. And as such, it would have cost us, the taxpayers, not only money, but it would have just prolonged this issue and dragged it out. We know one thing for certain, that anti-rail group is going to get enough signatures to call this question and put it on the ballot. The question is going to be whether it's going to be in November or 5 or 6 months down the line. Either way, it's going to be on the ballot. If it's not on the ballot in November and you have to put it on a special election ballot, that's going to cost us about $2.5 million. That's a lot of money. So remember, I called the city council. I said, why don't you guys be the leaders that you were elected to be and put this on the ballot? And it seems like they've got some wisdom now. They found some wisdom, and it'll probably be on the ballot unless the mayor vetoes it. That's the only thing that might happen. I think the mayor has indicated that he'd be okay with it on the ballot if it was in a charter amendment form, but it would have to have this and this, certain conditions on it, and then he would agree with it. So it seems like it's moving that direction, but Derek, I think you and myself and about 75% of the people in the state on Oahu agree that it should be on the ballot so the people can vote for it.
Okay, Derek, thanks very much. Got to move along. Let's go back to Paul, who I think we have a better connection on now. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. That's a good one now.
Yeah, the other comment, other than who they took the poll from, was...
Wait. Before you do that, you're talking about the SMS poll or the Harris, which one?
The Ward research.
Okay,
do you have any
difficulty with the SMS research?
No, just that the poll that they had in the Honolulu Advertiser yesterday... Out of the 500 people polled, 250 of them were along the route of the rail that they asked.
No, that was the Ward poll, not the SMS poll.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But the other comment was just about people understanding, you know, right now people go to work, and again, Hawaii is a family-based, you know, it's a tight-knit culture. Most people, whether they have family or elderly relatives or kids to pick up or whatnot, don't realize that I've been to other countries around the world that have mass transit, and when you have a six-legged journey, meaning three legs to go to work and three legs to come back home, it's a lot more planning, and there's no room for emergencies or anything else if you need to get up and go or if you use your vehicle. And I think that's something that maybe just hasn't been looked at as far as how possible is it, you know, to make those three-legged journeys to get to work when most people don't have enough time to go to McDonald's before they go to work. My question was for Iona was, what is the possibility of having for the state at least, having a four-day work week alternating?
That was looked at when last week or 2 weeks ago?
Yes, it was, Paul, and we're looking into that very seriously right now, so you'll be hearing some news on that very shortly.
I think we got to do it all, Paul.
I agree. Yeah.
We're studying it. As you know, Utah is the first state that's going to implement it across the board. I believe in a couple of weeks, New Mexico is to follow. They're next in line, and I believe there's a couple of other states that are going to do it also. So
I'd love to be a leader in that one.
Yeah, so am I. So we're studying it. I'm actively involved in that, and like I said, you'll probably get some information on that very shortly as to what we're going to do here in Hawaii.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah,
thanks, Paul. Let's go real quickly to another Paul, this one in Kaneohe. Hey, Paul, too.
Hey, sorry, you got the Paul show today. Hello, LG. How are you?
Aloha, Paul.
Hey, listen, I was listening to Derek and what he was talking about vouchers, and I just want to call and throw in my two cents on that. And the voucher, actually, the current figure is around
$11,000 per student in Hawaii, which is extremely high. And for a state that is in such woeful educational disarray, we should probably follow someone like Bobby Jindal's lead. Look at vouchers as a solution. Most of the fight that comes against vouchers is from the establishment. It's not from the parents and the students.
Yeah, of course.
So we can't cite the frustration with those who are against vouchers as a reason for not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that's kind of a fallback that we should avoid, that it's mm-hmm. a valuable program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great point. Listen, we're late for traffic and the news. Those of you that hold on, you stick around. We'll get back to you as fast as possible. Everybody's talking. They may not be agreeing, Duke, but they're all talking. And that's what it's all about. As a matter of fact, don't you notice that we could go, I mean, we got to get back to the phones because they're all plugged up. People want to talk to you. But, I mean, just in the election process alone, people are talking. Where we didn't, this year, I don't care who you are, what party you're in, you're out, national, local, I think that there's going to be people voting that haven't voted for a while because there's issues that need answers.
I love it. I think it's great. It's just, I just want the people to get educated on all of this, you know, so we vote intelligently.
Yeah, don't be voting how somebody else tells you.
Right.
You know, vote with your heart.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go out to Keith in Kapahulu, who waited the longest. Hey, Keith.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, Keith.
Lieutenant
Governor.
Hello. Oh, I had a question. You know, if Kapolei, which has been presented to us to be the second city to decentralize Honolulu and also perhaps the reason for the growth of 100,000 more homes out in the Eva area, if that's the focus of to decentralize Honolulu, why is there so much about bringing this rail to bring all of that stuff back into town?
Exactly.
You know what? I tell you something. I was talking about the same thing, Keith, a while ago, because I said to Lieutenant Governor, and I'm so glad you called on this subject, I said, you know, what we in the public don't have and what the people in government are forced to have is a look down the road 20, 30 years. In spite of the fact that we have a second city, you know, and in spite of the fact that we put 100,000 more people out there, we are still going to be choked coming into town every day in 30 years.
Yeah, I guess part of it, Keith, you make a great point. I've said that numerous times as to, you know, one of the reasons why you question not only some of the numbers that you as Mike just said that are being predicted, but you wonder why something of this magnitude is needed when everything's going to move out there, and it's all based on projections, and I guess for the, you know, on the realization that I don't know if I'm calling it a realization because I think it is going to be the realization. Not everything will move out to Kapolei. So the majority of businesses of government will be still in Honolulu, and so as such, people will be coming into Honolulu. And right now, that corridor is the most congested, packed corridor in the state. And so this is a alternative. That's what's being proposed, is an alternative or another option for people to transport themselves and their families and everybody else into town. And I guess that's the premise on this. But I've raised that. I've questioned that. I've said, with that being in mind, that Kapolei, and I live out in Kapolei, and I've seen how it's growing. In fact, I've just been marveling at the judiciary. That building is coming up very quickly. It's going to be a nice, solid building. I see a new shopping center coming out. I see other buildings coming in. We got the Department of Hawaiian Homelands out there as a department in its entirety. A couple of other departments may be moving out there. I know some county offices will be moving out there. And you got a lot of people that will be now living and working and playing and going to school in the Eva region, and you just question that. So you make a great point. But again, it's all based on projections. It's all based on the future, and the future is mass transit. So it's what kind of system do we want with mass transit? That's the question.
Thank you.
Okay, my brother. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Larry in Waikiki. Hello, Larry.
Hello, guys. I want to thank you for the time. I'm interested if you know how much the increase would be for homeowners if mass transit. It goes through the taxes. How much increase in taxes would be paying on average?
I'll let the Lieutenant Governor answer from the state side, Larry. But you understand that your real property taxes are collected by the city and county of Honolulu. Okay. Yeah, so that's not a state issue. That's a city. Now, will that affect part of transit? Right now, the city administration is telling us no. They're saying that the 0.5% tax on your goods and services purchased are what's going to be running the transit. But, Lieutenant Governor, when anybody gets painted into a corner, and I don't care if it's the state where you guys got to take the hit or the city, that what happens is when you run out of nickels, you got to get some more and something's got to go up.
Well, absolutely. And Mike raises a good point. In Honolulu County, the major source of income is your real property tax. And if you recall this, the history of this excise tax and how it came about, the original request was for 1%, I believe 1.5%.
Right.
And of course that got whittled down to where it is right now, which is 0.5%. So in my mind, there's no doubt in my mind that in subsequent years, it may not be in the next 3 or 4 or 5, even 10 years, but in subsequent years, if this rail transit is built, there will be a request to increase that general excise tax. If not, then definitely your real property taxes will be increased. I don't know what it would be. That's a county function, but they will recalculate the numbers on that. And I don't know if people near the transit would be paying more. I don't know how it would work. But those are the only two sources that I can see from government funding that could assist in the maintenance of this transit system right now, because you're not going to do it with fees. In other words, with ridership fees, because that basically is everything is subsidized in any type of mass transit system that you have. So the fees that you collect from riders is just basically doesn't cover much of the operating costs. So you look to government to subsidize it, and they do it by way of taxes.
So there you go. I mean, you're welcome for the answer. Let's go next to Sue in Ala Moana. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Lieutenant Governor.
Hello, Sue.
Hi. You were talking about alternative work schedules, and I had a little experience with one. I worked at a Navy research laboratory in San Diego. You might remember we had a marine mammal facility at Kaneohe Bay.
Yes, we did. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and in 1980, because of similar situations with the fuel and the energy costs, we went on a schedule called a 5-4-9, which was 5 days a week, 1 week, 4 days the next week, and Friday off. So you had a 9-hour day, which people can tolerate much better than a 10-hour day. It was so popular that every new commanding officer that came in wanted to kill it, because they couldn't communicate with Washington, D.C., which is where their first allegiance was. Now, because we completely shut down on the off Fridays. But it could work, even keeping offices open, you know, to handle the pedestrian traffic or the walk-in traffic. It's just an alternative to the 10-hour day, which is a killer. It's just a killer. But that was so popular with the employees that they couldn't, the bigwigs couldn't kill it.
Interesting.
Well, thank you, Sue. Yeah. As I've been studying this more, there's all kinds of different options out there, and that's one of them. You're right. Another one that I heard of is called 980. In other words, 9 days, 80 hours, basically every other week. Yeah, Friday is off, and so you work you work it that way. And
let me ask you this, because thanks very much for your question, Sue. But let me ask you this, because in the past, I think these things have been talk to for maybe as like an employee benefit. Wouldn't it be nice if I only had to work 4 days? But don't you think that now we're seeing a trend where it's mandatory to look at this kind of stuff because we didn't have the problems that we had before?
Well, I don't know if it's mandatory, but yeah, I think it's if it's part of your responsibility. To me, it's being responsible for you to look at something like this.
No, what I mean I don't mean that it's mandatory to change, but it's mandatory to study it.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, to find out if there's any sort of a way that we can do a paradigm shift on our thinking about this. Because, I mean, remember when the hard decision that came for the libraries to close up? You know, nobody likes change. And I work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Right.
Now, I don't want to work 9 to 9.
Right.
You know, but I mean, they get with it. You know, you get another day off.
Well, you know, and the public was also factored in that simply because now you're cutting down service to the public, which is a big part of this formula that we have to look at. But times are different now, Mike, because a lot of things are done, especially with our services to the public from the state side, online. We've got a lot of things that are online. So basically, you're getting 24/7 service anyway.
Hey, you know what? It used to be, wow, you got a computer? And now people say, wow, you don't have a computer?
There you go. No,
it's
that's
like
right.
We've had a paradigm shift.
So you're right. So things like that have changed dramatically. And so, you're right. As far as mandatory and looking at it, you owe that to the system to at least look at it.
Okay, out to IAEA and Rob next. Hello, Rob. Thanks for waiting.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Lieutenant Governor.
Aloha, Rob.
I thought there was talk, and you can correct me if I was wrong, before the Super Ferry started service, that it was going to do a start a run in the morning at like Kohina or something and bring cars and people into Aloha Tower before going to Maui or Kauai. Does that sound familiar?
No, doesn't sound familiar to me. No. Well, it was from where again?
From start out like Kohina side at the harbor out there and then do a run in for people who wanted to come into town.
Oh, no.
Before it went to another island. That came up as an option?
No.
You know what? Just looking at it from what limited range I have on it, Rob, I don't think there's a facility out there that could do it.
Yeah.
Number one. And number two, I don't think it would be financially advisable for Super Ferry to try to do that, because how much would people willing to be willing to pay to drive a car on and drive a car off, like in the ferries that operate, say, in the Pacific Northwest, in Puget Sound, they're little things that are cheap to run.
Yeah.
You can't run that a la Kai from Kalailoa to Honolulu cheap.
No.
Yeah.
No. And of course, I think the city has that boat going on right now. I don't know how well it's doing. I know it.
Well, no cars.
There's still an option. I mean, you know, it's still an option for people to go on. So I don't know. And again, it would probably take you. How long would it take you, Mike, would you say,
It would take, if just on the water, a boat, a big boat like that, to build up speed and then slow down again, it would probably take the better part of an hour anyway.
There you go. So it just doesn't.
Because you got to load it and unload it, and, you know, what's going to happen when only 9 cars show up one day? Good thinking, Rob. Thanks very much for the question. It's 47 minutes after the hour. Lieutenant Governor Drew Guyoli in the house.
That's dating us, but so what year was that?
Well, I got to tell you something kind of really funny. The other day was Larry Minetti's birthday for Magna.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
61.
He's 61.
Okay, so I said, gee, you know, everybody's getting old that was in Magnum. And I can remember all of us that had these bit parts in there. When it comes up again, you say, wow, who's that kid? You know? And then I said, the Hawaii 5-0 guys, man, they're really getting
old. Yeah.
And right out of that, Jimmy MacArthur, book him down, call me up.
Oh, really?
Driving down the street. He says, hey, we're not that old. But you know, you're right, because that goes back into the 60s. The late 50s and 60s. And that's 60s through 70. And you know what? Hawaii 5-0 is rebroadcast on a syndicated basis worldwide, just like Magnum, every single day. And it keeps working for us.
It does.
No matter what.
It does.
Okay, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. One of the things that I want to cover with LG is we saw this alarming statistic the other day. And maybe our kids are looking a little older and everything. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that there's an awful lot of stores that just are so desperate to sell whatever they can that they've been pushing the envelope, and a larger number than in the past have been selling to minor cigarettes. There's a great thing that you guys are doing about that. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is we're going to just try to get out there and crack down on these stores that are selling to our minors cigarettes. Let me just start with this. I think we all know that, first of all, cigarette smoking is the number one killer in America, not only here in Hawaii, but in America in general. Secondly, that it's preventable. Thirdly, that those who smoke now usually began before the age of 18. And third, we have seen a spike, as you said. We went from 8.7% in 2007 to 11.2% in 2008. So what that means is that we had about the 15 to 20 more stores selling to minors than we did in 2007, and it's been increasing over the past few years. We hit a low point about in 2004. We were really good. We were down to, I believe it was in the it was 6% or 7%. We were doing really well. And then I guess maybe people get complacent. I'm not sure. Yep. Like you said, maybe we weren't tough enough on them in regards to imposing fines.
For some reason, one of the things that came up on my show a couple weeks ago was more and more of these videos, the rap videos, people are smoking in them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a long time they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw something, and I picked this up because I knew we were going to be talking about this a little bit today. I picked up this brochure, Preventing Youth Tobacco Use. It's pretty interesting. And I don't know if you've got that or not, but I'm assuming that you've seen it. But the interesting thing to me is that it's sponsored by Philip Morris, a tobacco company.
Mm.
Now, I know that they have to do a certain amount of this, but that brochure is telling the people that read it, we can be smoke-free. And that's like a company like Philip Morris saying, but we hope you don't read this. Because, I mean, honestly, aren't they mandated to do a certain amount on prevention?
I'm not sure if there's any mandate for the tobacco companies, because I don't know the breadth of the settlement that they had. But all I know is they put in a lot of money into educating and prevention programs for the various states. So it's sort of like the alcohol industry. They have adopted what I would call voluntary policies or the proposed policies that they voluntarily follow. And like with the advertising for alcohol, for beer companies, they said they're not going to advertise to any TV shows where 30% or more, 30% or more of the audience is under the age of 21. But we know that's not true. So they're not following their own policy. So I'm not sure if that's what the tobacco companies have. But I will tell you this. What we're going to try to do, Mike, is we're going to, if we need to, we are going to introduce legislation this session in which we're going to try to see if we're going to have to find the owners of these stores. Because right now, the owners themselves,
I wasn't there.
They have, they basically don't have, they're not subject to any type of fine or sanctions as a result of their clerks selling to minors. So, you know, what could easily happen is you know, what's $500 for a clerk? I mean,
bet.
You know, for the amount of money that these guys are making off of cigarettes. Now, remember.
You mean an owner.
You get, $6 a pack on these cigarettes.
It doesn't
cigarettes.
Take long.
You can sell just a few, and you got that $500 back. So
let's go to the phones real quick on this subject. I got Dwight out in Hawaii Kai about underage smoking. Hello, Dwight.
Yeah, good afternoon. It seems like anytime I pass a high school and even intermediate school, there's a bunch of kids outside smoking cigarettes.
I saw it today in Hawaii Kai.
Yeah, now is it not a law? Okay, I know it's illegal to sell to them, but is it illegal for them to be smoking? And if it is, I think if police stop each time there's kids outside of a school smoking, and they at least stop and hand out a couple of $50 tickets.
Let's ask the judge. Let's ask Duke. Is there a law against kids smoking?
You know, that's something that we
there isn't.
There isn't. The short of it is there isn't. It's very inconsistent. In fact, very unreasonable. But they can be fined if they purchase. How's that? So if they purchase, they can be fined. But if they're smoking it, there's no sanction to it.
So then what's the law for? It's either against the law or it isn't it. I mean, DUI is against the law, so it doesn't matter where you purchase it.
I agree. And we tried to introduce something last session. We're going to try again this session to put it on the par with drinking also. So you're right. There isn't. But let me tell you this. This is something that you're going to say, well, it can't be. But our numbers, as far as our young people smoking, those under 18 smoking, have gone down tremendously. It's gone down over 12% in the last 7 years. So we're making progress in that regard.
We're running up towards the top of the hour. We're going to run out of time here in this segment. But real quick, let's go to Maureen on the road. Hello, Maureen.
Hi. You guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. I do have a quick question. I was a friend that had to have some pulmonary tests done, and I was in the general office, and there was a wonderful poster up on the wall provided by a pharmaceutical company, and it showed a cross-section of the lungs, what smoking can do, and I mean, and I tell you, I quit a long time ago, and I'm glad I did, but when I read it, the hair on my skin just rose, and I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to see all that kind of posters in schools so children can read them and have a color picture, but
well, that's a great one. Maureen, we're going to run out of time, but that's a great subject for conversation.
Yes,
and I know that that's part of the plan.
Right,
it is. Like they show the kids the death on the highway movie?
Right, right.
You got to show them death by cigarette.
And we are doing more of that. Thanks, Maureen.
That's going to wrap us up, Lieutenant Governor. Thanks
Aloha.
For being here. We'll see you again next time.